नमो भक्ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Okay, so chapter 16, how Prigitpa received the age of Kali. Translation, text 1. Suta Goswami said, O learned Brahmanas, Maharaj Prigit then began to rule over the earth world as a great devotee of the Lord under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. Report. At the time of Maharaj Prigit's birth, the expert astrologer, Brahmanas, foretold some of his qualities. Maharaj Prigit developed all those qualities, being a great devotee of the Lord. And so it's important to understand that qualities come because of devotional service. Right? It means one is born with certain qualities. Right? That's there from one's previous karma. And to increase that or develop that, one would have to work very hard for a very long time to adjust any of those qualities or improve them. Not that they couldn't be, but it's with so much work, and then you get something. But with devotional service, that's how then so many nice qualities can develop very quickly, very nicely. Like it's said that the devotee, the pure devotee, has all the good qualities of demigods. So we see is the 26 qualities that are there in the devotees, that those are inherent, those are natural to the soul. They're not something that's covering, it's not conditioning. Well, for a materialist, if they don't have good qualities or they have good qualities, it's because of their conditioning. So the soul actually doesn't have any of those qualities. That has to be appreciated. That's why it says the materialist has the non-devotees, they have no good qualities. Not that their conditioning is not manifesting them, but the soul itself doesn't have any. You understand? Because they're identifying with the body. So whatever the body and mind has, that's what they have. And if that changes, then that changes. If it goes the other way, it goes like that. So it's not inherent to the soul. Does that make sense? Well, then for the devotees, then by the devotional process, the qualities they develop, those are connected with the soul. Those are qualities that the soul has, not the conditioner. So the 26 qualities of the devotees, those are qualities that belong to the soul. You understand? So now you can say the soul has good qualities. So that's what you say, the devotee has good qualities. Now, one may say that, okay, well, there's devotees, some devotees, they may not have as nice a qualities as some karmis that I know. But the point is that the conditioning of that devotee has less good qualities than the conditioning of the karmi. Right? But the difference is with time, that devotee will develop all the nice qualities and the karmi will remain the same or, who knows what will end up with. Is this important? Right? So why bring this up? Because it's important to note that it's through devotional service that all good things come, auspiciousness. Does that make sense? And so how is that coming? By getting Krishna's grace, by getting Krishna's mercy. Right? So now, management, administration, that we're doing as service to Krishna. So you have to understand it follows the same principle as anything else in devotional service. Right? It's not that you have devotional service, then you have this separate ultimate pinnacle of human existence called management. Right? No, it's also devotional service. So everyone engages in devotional service according to their nature. Those who have management abilities, they manage for Krishna. Right? So it's not that the management itself is a superior position. Does that make sense? It is just, it's an important position that those with that nature, they do that, just like cooking lunch. If no one could cook, then how well would the human race go on? Right? We'd be out there in the back there digging holes in the ground with that rabbit, trying to find something to eat. Right? Does that make sense? So, Therefore, because the cooks are there, we can maintain human dignity. In a sense. So this whole idea that management is the superior thing, and it's above all things, that's something that's there from the, it's always there because the living entity thinks I'm the controller, right? So to control, then you have to organize and manage. And I'm the enjoyer. Right? These are the two reasons we come to the material world. So who can control better enjoys better. So therefore, the better who can control is on the top of the pile. You understand? So that's why you see in history, you always find this dynamic where anyone who's managing always thinks they're superior. Sometimes they respect authority, and sometimes they don't. You know, you always find that dynamic. Yes? Yeah. So that's because the soul thinks that when I control, I enjoy. And who's ever the best control and enjoyer, then that's the pinnacle of material perfection. That's why we're here. So we have to understand is that it's very important because it organizes so many things. But in organizing those things, what's the purpose of organizing them? Right? So we're doing devotional service because we're organizing it, we're managing it. Right? And what's being managed, others are taking part in that, and that's their devotional service. And so this way everybody's engaged in devotional service. Right? So the importance of management is the ability to organize things so the devotional service goes on nicely. Does this make sense? That's its purpose. Now, within that, it's just like anything else. You do something to please Krishna. Krishna being pleased, things will go however, how he likes it to go. Right? So then we'll advance in devotional service, things may be going very nicely, all these things, right? Does that make sense? So it's not that management generates more, more mercy or more devotional development, right? Management is just a tool to be used or engaged by the living entity. And how much you commit yourself to it, that's how much you'll advance. Right? So since you're doing organization of management and it benefits so many people by they can be involved in devotional service, not that your management benefits them, it's the devotional service they're engaged in from that is benefiting them. So we always have to understand the management's always in a secondary position to devotional service. If that's understood, then the devotional benefit you get from managing is so much greater. And then from that, then all nice qualities develop. And if a manager has good qualities, it's so much better than if they don't. Right? Because it's not the management skill that makes everything go nicely. It's that management skill with the good qualities. Otherwise, you have a really good manager that doesn't have nice qualities, and it doesn't always work out so good. Right? History shows so many like that. Does it make sense? So we're just trying to put the whole thing in a position where then it's appreciated that as someone who manages, then we see it as our devotional service. It's something we can do. And then being able to do that, that's how we'll be engaged and we'll advance in devotional service. And by also helping others engage, then we'll also get benefit of that. We'll get benefit from our service and from helping others engage in their service. So that's where you get more benefit, but we see it's connected with devotional service. And it's not the management that creates that. It's devotional service that creates it. Otherwise, if we were managers in the material world, how much devotional benefit would we be getting? Right? Working in some company, some factory, someplace, managing something. That manager, would that generate for us devotional service? Right? No. So therefore, we get no benefit from that. We would be developing no good qualities because of it. Right? Somebody says. So that's the thing. Material platform, you try to endeavor for these good qualities, then you may get them. But otherwise, just managing, where's the good qualities? It's not inherent. You have to apply them. But devotional service will actually generate the good qualities. Does this make sense? It's very important to understand this. Otherwise, then what will happen? How is something service? Service is because we say it's my service, but service means you're serving Krishna, you're serving the Vaishnavas. So a manager's service is their ability to make arrangements so that others can be involved in service. Right? So then if this mentality is there, where is the opportunity for pride? Right? Does that make sense? Because that's a very important thing. We see now, Lord Chaitanya's explaining, okay, if you're humble, right, then you can be tolerant. What does tolerant mean? Tolerant means you're able to forgive. Right? Intolerance means the inability to forgive. Something happens and you're intolerant means you can't forgive. Right? So generally you can't forgive because you think you're something special. Right? So when there's humble humility, then there's tolerance. Then when there's that, then you can respect others, even if you're not being respected. Right? And then what's the result of that? You can always chant the holy name. So since chanting is our main thing, therefore this process should be followed. Right? And then we can always chant. So that fixes us in devotional service. But now to go farther, then there must be a taste in devotional service, right? So how's that going to come? Then, na dhanam, na janam, na sundari. Right? When there's no interest in all these social prestige and facilities, then we can be involved in ahaitapi bhakti, in pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So then that situates us nicely. Right? Then from that, then we can get attachment. That'll turn to go to bhava, that will go to prema. That's the whole process. So in other words, we can all just do our own bhajan, but when we come together and try to organize something, do something nice, that's where management then comes in. So management is something that the preachers use to organize more preaching. But we always have to remember, it's not the management itself that is the successful element or ingredient. It's the devotion, because otherwise you can be a great manager, but if you're not devotional, then one won't do very well in Krishna consciousness. One will not be satisfied. Why? Because one doesn't have the humility, one doesn't have these things, one will be intolerant of others not dealing the way that you want and expect them to. You'll want, where are the facilities, where's the dhanam, the janam, the sundarin, where's all this stuff? I'm managing, I'm the best here, where is all this? Does that make sense? And so one won't last in devotional service. Right? One will go away frustrated, this one this, and that one that, and I was doing so much, and no one appreciates, and all these kind of self-centered stuff. And we'll think that I'm the victim, and everybody else is the nonsense, and yeah. You know what I'm saying? So maybe after 10, 20 years, you might, you know, eternal nature kicks you around the block a few times. You know, then you might be able to kind of be a little more humble, and then because of that, now you're able to tolerate, you know, these things, then you're able to take up the chanting and do things very nicely. But the point is do you want to waste 10 years? I'm giving 10 years because that seems to be about the average. But I have seen those who are really determined to take some 20. Right? Does that make sense? So, if this context is understood, that the whole thing is that it always has to be seen in context of pure devotional service. Now we may say, of course it's for that. Now let's focus on the real substance here, the management. But that's the whole point. Everybody does that. I mean, literally. You know what I'm saying? We're thinking, no, because I'm not doing that to send them. I'm just getting the manager. This is special. This is unique. No, every manager can make this mistake. It's just the modes of nature. It's not something special. And it's like, whatever you do and it goes well, then you think you're special. It doesn't matter what it is. Right? The kid, the first time they can tie their shoes themselves, oh man, they're the most, you know, special person in the world. You know what I'm saying? It's just how false ego works. So we have to remember is that if you're not always seeing how what you're doing in management is pushing forward pure devotional service, then literally speaking, you're not a manager in devotional service. You understand? You might be a great manager outside of the karmic world if you have the karma. Right? Because just because you're a great manager doesn't mean the material world will recognize you. So never think that, oh, if I was outside, I'd be doing better. That's like, you can put that one after, you know, Yudhishthira Maharaj is the number one amazing thing in the world, how everyone dies, but the individual thinks I'm not going to die. You know, so another one on that list, you know, there's a few of them on that list, but another one is that, you know, if I was somewhere else, not in devotional service, then I'd be doing so well materially and everybody would be respecting and appreciating what I'm doing. That's another one on the list. Right? In other words, material world doesn't care for anybody like that. That you can be guaranteed. You know? And you must admit, she has, the most practice, right? She's been managing the material world since time immemorial. And not just this one universe. When we say Maya, she's not just managing our universe. It's all the unlimited universes. So she's good, right? And you have that she does not care like that. Does that make sense? So always keep it in mind that it's special to be engaged in devotional service. It's special. It's by the mercy of Krishna, mercy of Guru and the Vaishnavas, we're able to be engaged in devotional service. Does this make sense? So that's very important. So if that's appreciated, then the whole approach can be nice. Because in other words, if we have that point of humility, then we can gain knowledge. Right? Because in the training sessions about gaining knowledge, trying to contemplate it, trying to practically apply it. And we see in Gita when, I think it's 13.8, when Krishna gives 20 aspects of knowledge, then the central point of it is humility. Right? Because knowledge can be gained. So therefore, from particular understandings or techniques and not that, you can either get pride or humility. Right? So if you're proud, then your ability to apply the knowledge will be limited. Well, if the knowledge is, if you're able to be humble, now you can start to apply it. Does that make sense? Because the aspect of manana, or of being able to apply knowledge, that's something that you have to accept the knowledge, contemplate the knowledge, and try to practice it. But unless there's humility, that it comes from higher authority, and based on that, then I'm engaged in activity. Right? Then it's not going to happen. Otherwise, you means like the example, you can't fill a cup that's already full. Right? So that's the whole point. But like the ocean, unlimited water goes in, and it's peaceful, it's calm. It doesn't get more, it doesn't get bigger, it doesn't... So... Yeah. Okay, so we're good on this little bit of an intro. Yeah? Okay. Okay, the real qualification to become a devotee of the Lord, and gradually all the good qualities worthy of possession develop. Oh no, the real qualification is to become a devotee of the Lord, and gradually all the good qualities worthy of possession develop. It means whatever qualities are worth having, those develop because of devotional service. Right? You understand this is a whole different way of viewing here. That's what we're trying to do. The most important thing to develop is how to look at the world, how to look at devotional service, right? The Shastra Chakshus. It's not the knowledge and skill. It's the Shastra Chakshus, because we have to remember it is, in general, it's Krishna's world. So if you follow the mechanics of management, then generally speaking, it will work. You know, if you don't have something in your karma that even though you're doing the right thing, it's being blocked. Right? You know, just like, let's say someone else is doing good management and out of, you know, some personal motive, you get in the way of their position so that you can get the benefit. Right? Pretty standard, no? Yes? No? Never heard of it. It doesn't happen in Finland. Everybody's so nice and wonderful, right? No? Okay. So, that means if we've done that to someone, then we could be doing everything properly, and it still doesn't work because somebody's getting in the way. Right? So that's karma. So that's the point of the material world. Even you have the knowledge and skill, if you don't have the karma, it's still not going to work. Right? Now, devotional service, then you may have the knowledge and skill, but if you're not pleasing Krishna, it's not going to work. Because it's His laws. He is management. He is the laws of management. So if you please Him in devotional service, then it will work in the context of devotional service. Right? Otherwise, we think, because I did it, it's happening. But just for reference sake, that's Jaimini's philosophy. Because I did the good karma, I will get the result. So God has nothing to do with it. Because I did it, I get the result. God simply has to supply it. You understand? So, pure devotional service, unfortunately, is not preached by Jaimini. Otherwise, if it was, life would be very easy. Because then we could go on in our ego, our false, you know, position, and everything would be perfect. But unfortunately, we see is that we have to actually take the humble position. Right? Does that make sense? And so, being in a humble position doesn't mean others will step all over you, because you know how to manage. You know how to balance the situation. It just means your outlook on it is that of humility. So it's by Krishna's mercy we're able to get an opportunity to serve Krishna by engaging our nature. Right? So then devotional service says the real quality is to become a devotee. That's the real qualification. Otherwise, the material qualification, yes, but whether you can use it or not depends upon your sincerity. It's not your knowledge and skill. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So in other words, like in the material world, it's karma that will define whether you can use it or not. So in the spiritual world, it's whether it's bhakti, whether you can use it or not. Mechanical points of management, those are just standard anywhere. Spiritual world, material world, it's just a utensil. You know? Just like a pot in cooking. We use pots here to cook. Mother Jashoda uses pots to cook. We put things on the fire, she puts things on the fire. She puts stuff in the pot, we put stuff in the pot. Mechanics are same. Just maybe better quality mechanics, less better quality mechanics. Does that make sense? Like a better pot, it doesn't stick. Another pot, you know, everything sticks. Even water sticks and burns, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing is the mechanics. We get too bewildered by the mechanics. Why? That's why we've come to the material world. Means seeing the mechanics in the spiritual world and the benefits being gained from that, that experience of the mechanics, we're taking as that's happiness. Rather than those mechanics being used in Krishna's service. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah. So that's then what we have to try to generate, is that understanding of Krishna consciousness. And it's not that, oh yeah, of course it's about Krishna. Now let's get down to the substance. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. We'll try introducing this now. We'll see. In the Vedic concept, means you're dealing with, you know, what you perceive by the senses. Right? The things around you, the senses, the sense objects. So, and what's going on, the interaction between the senses and sense objects and all these different things that we see, you know, what's known as pratyaksha, what you can perceive with the senses, right? So in the modern means, so that's, that would generally be called objective, right? Like if we're looking at knowledge, then that's objective because it's just the science, it's just the facts, right? Then when we process that knowledge, you know, in the mind, then we come up with our feelings about it, right? You know, how we perceive it, our feelings and all that. And then that would be called as subjective, right? Does that make sense? So objective is general, it's there for everybody, but how you experience is that subjective, that's personal to you, right? And we'll make friends according to people who their subjectivity is similar to yours. Does that make sense? You know, so the area of objectivity that you like to work in, and therefore the and also the particular subjectivity that you gain from that objectivity, that's how you make friends. Does that make sense? So they both have to be there. They go together because the particular object situation generates the subjective, and the subjective is also how you deal with the objective. Right? We're cool on that? That's pretty standard stuff, at least in the academic world. They really get bent out of shape about all this. So I think it's a very core feature of their academy. So now, that's standard. So the modern, the Vedic, you know, doesn't matter. It's all, this is all the same. Now here comes the difference. The modern will say the objective is concrete and the subjective is abstract. Does that make sense? Is this a feeling? It's this and that, right? And here, this objective, it's right there, it's facts, you can see it, you know, touch it, smell it, taste it, you know, whether you want to go over and, you know, lick the book or not, but that's another thing. But whatever it is, you could if you wanted to, right? You know, you have the freedom to. So they'll say, that's concrete, and the feelings you get, that's abstract, right? And therefore, then the, you know, world goes on in a very nice, impersonal way. Because it's not about the individual, it's about the facts. Mm. Right? So in other words, the modern academy is, by definition, impersonal. That's just how it works. And then that's what's being taught, because all the intellectuals, they're trained in it, the scientists and all that. So we explain things according to that objective thing, and we'll go, okay, yeah, now it makes sense. Right? So, yeah. Now the Vedic, unfortunately, we see, unfortunately for the materialist, is the opposite. The subjective is the concrete, and the objective is the abstract. When they go, how is that possible? Because you have one situation that we call concrete, and 10 different people experiencing that concrete, they'll all come up with different, I mean that abstract point, they'll all, excuse me, objective point, they're all going to come up with different subjective, you know, realities. So what does that mean? That means the object being seen by those 10 people, that's the abstract. Because abstract means you come up with anything. You understand? So the same thing, that one person will get one feeling from, another person may get the exact opposite. Does that make sense? You have a fancy car, someone will go, wow, that's nice. But someone else will go, you know, oh, this capitalistic society. You know, like this. You understand? It's just, you get all these different range. So that's the whole point, is that what we call the objective that we call the concrete, actually, it's the abstract. That's why it's impersonal. It doesn't have any personal, you know, experiences from it. It just exists, right? And the existence isn't what gives anyone happiness. That's why the more we focus on it, the less we become happy, because it's only existing. You know, and when has something existing been the definition of happiness? Right? Does that make sense? So the subjective is the concrete, because you do what you do because of the subjective. You like it, you evolve yourself. You don't like it, you don't involve yourself. It's that simple. Right? That's how it works. That makes sense. And so in this, then we see is that on that subjective or that concrete, you have five levels of consciousness. Because otherwise we say, oh, but then, you know, the whole thing is, you know, being subjective, everybody can feel in this and that, how you organize anything, according to the level of consciousness. So that gives you the anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, like this, the five levels of consciousness. So for devotees, then they follow this thing, and concrete means anandamai, how it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? That's concrete. Right, you know, for the impersonalists, how they can get liberation, for others, how they can get, you know, facility, you know, enjoyment, piety, you know, the religious duties, someone else is how they can get money or justice, someone else is just how they can get sense gratification, something sense. That's then their level of reality, because the reality is not the facts, the reality is how you perceive the facts, because you're an individual, you're a person. That has to be accepted. Right? Unless you want to accept it yourself and that rock out in the garden are the same. Right? Because they're just objective reality. Just facts. Right? No, it's the subjective that makes you a living entity. Does that make sense? The objective is dead matter. The subjective is the person. But now the person has to bring their person, you know, how you say their personage in line with Krishna. So therefore, when you perceive things on the level of anandamaya, then now it becomes real. Okay? So now why this digression here? Because when we talk about management and how to do it, we will look at the objective element and say that that's concrete. Because now that we've gotten the objective organized, our strategy, our plan, and that, now we have something solid. No, you don't have anything solid until it's connected with Krishna, and the devotees involved will be connected to Krishna. There may be some factual elements, but it has no value in devotional service until that subjective connection is made. Right? And why do we bring this up right at the beginning? Because that's one of the biggest phobias and weaknesses of managers. They absolutely refuse to take into consideration the personal element of everyone they're dealing with because it makes it so much harder. Right? Because the subjective reality is themselves. And what's easier for me as a manager, that's the way it's going down. And to be able to accommodate everybody else and their trips and this and that, that's not real management. So therefore, we're not doing this. We see. So that's why management fails. Maybe it's going, no one likes, no one wants to be around, no one wants to take part. What's this? Everything's going fine, what they're complaining about. The other is, they don't care about anybody, they don't care about us. You know? You know what I'm saying? Right? So that's me. You know, the song about they don't care about us is about the people, not about the government. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It means the people, the government doesn't care about the people. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on, is that we have to understand is if you don't consider the subjective or the Krishna conscious effect on the individuals and you only take the objective, what the management of the senses and sense objects, That's the technique of management, but it's not devotional service. So that's why every point where you're going through, you have to be able to see it in connection to devotional service. This kind of thing that I'm a devotee, I do devotional service, so whatever I do is devotional service. That's actually a really that's an improper application of logic. Means whatever I do devotionally, that's devotional service. Whatever I do that's not devotional, that's not devotional service. Right? We've heard the term mixed devotional service. Mixed means there's an aspect that is devotional. Right? It means we're doing something in connection with Krishna. Management is connected to Krishna. So it is devotional service, but our attitude in dealing with it is not. We'll get benefit for the devotional part, but we'll also get, you know, Maya's nice arrangement for the non-devotional part. We know how well she can organize us to not get a good experience from the non-devotional part. Does that make sense? So that means we always have to be able to see the devotion, means the devotional aspect of it, pure devotion in everything we're doing and organizing. Now, if one's regularly doing this, it becomes very easy. It's simultaneous, because the whole point is that the secondary and the primary, if the secondary is being engaged in the service of the primary, or primary means Krishna, then that means that they're non-different. So with practice, they become non-different, and it goes very smoothly. So only in the beginning, maybe it's a little difficult to always consider all these things. But with time, you're just able. Otherwise, how does you know, the Pandavas in the previous chapter, and now Parikshit Maharaj in this chapter, how are they able to deal with the whole planet, right? We only have to manage, a temple, a department. Some have to manage a zone, like this. But they're the whole world, right? And when they say the whole world, they mean everybody in the whole world, not just the ones connected with ISKCON. Does that make sense? So they can do it, and they can do all this simultaneously. So it's just a matter of practice. But this idea is that, of course, it's for devotional service. That doesn't work like that. We're saying it does, but that's our subjective reality. So we're saying the objective is so important. So technically, objectively, you haven't connected it, because you're not including the other people. You're not including how it functions mechanically in devotional service. So all that has to be taken into consideration. When it is, then we'll see we're happy because it's devotional service, right? From the principle of Krishna is happy, we're happy, right? You water the root, then the leaves are satisfied, right? So we'll be happy, all the other devotees will be happy, everything, the world will be happy. Even the karmis will be happy. Does that make sense? It's just how it works. So these are very important. So we've heard all these basic elements of philosophy, but we have to understand this in the Vedic context, these fundaments are up, not down. Since the knowledge descends, what descends first is that principle. Then, as you're qualified, then the detail starts to develop. Does that make sense? Yeah? Well, in the modern, then the principles are on the bottom, the foundation, and then you build up from there. So the higher it gets and the better it gets, the more it's just about detail, and you don't know who even remembers about the principle. Right? If you get into postgraduate study, they might bring it up if you have a mentor that kind of appreciates that. Right? But otherwise, you won't hear of it again. Does that make sense? Grandparents sitting in the rocking chair may talk about it. Like that, but young people, what do they care? Because it's they don't see it as real, right? Because it's so simple. So these fundamental points that if Krishna's pleased, we're pleased, means if you're not applying that in management, we're pleasing Krishna, and in a way that it accommodates whatever the situation we're in, then how will it work? Does it make sense? So it's very important that, in other words, Krishna consciousness has to be included in the process. Right? You don't have to get distracted from what you're doing. But its point is you're going through certain mechanics. Those remain, but the added element of how Krishna consciousness is applied to that remains. That has to be done. Not that, someone else has a different idea, so they go into different mechanics. And that's the Krishna consciousness. It's not that one mechanics is better than another. They all have their particular place. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Kind of. I am speaking in English, right? Okay. It's not that we're speaking in Swahili or something. Yes?
This last point about one manager may think these mechanics are better, another manager may think these mechanics are better. So, but there must be some, like, one of them must be right.
So one has to be right and the other has to be absolutely and totally wrong.
No, but it's like...
So you're saying Machiavelli is on to something.
I just mean how to find out the... Because you're talking about you have to understand the principles before...
Yes, so what is... So in here, okay, you're trying to find out what's right. So what will be the difference in different mechanics? What would be, if there's one option to do and another option to do, what's the consideration? What means, why would there be different approaches?
I think because of different experiences.
Okay, so then the experiential is there. So if we approach it from that aspect, then... what is their experience? Why is that experience there? So therefore, if you want to actually have a real discussion on which management point you want to do, you have to actually discuss the experiential. Mm-hmm. And so that the experience they're looking for, they can see that that's there in your system. You understand? Mm-hmm. Or the other way or whatever. So in other words, the experiential has to be part of it. But we don't have to digress into... everything about the experiential. That's why we have to be able to be on point. So you have to be able to stick to the point that's there and the experience there, not that that experience has, you know, 10 other also similar experiences, and so I'll bring up all that and just waste everybody's time. The point is okay, they're thinking by doing this it'll be more pleasant, and you're thinking by doing this it'll be more efficient. But the point is efficient doesn't necessarily give a bad experience, right? Let's just take, for example, this may be very abstract, but okay, from the car drives up in front of the hotel, the guy opens the door, the driver gets the luggage goes in, you're walked in, you go to the desk, they just hand you your key, they take you, you go up to your room, your luggage is already there, and they ask, is there anything else you want? Now, was that efficient or not? You don't get more efficient than that, right? You can't organize more than that unless they could, you know, teleport you from the airport. Why from the airport? Just from your house, from your living room into the the hotel room. Right? You know, okay, that's... The point is, that's the most... And now, does that give a good experience? No, it doesn't give
partially.
Partially. Why partially? You want them to be tearing you in a pallet? What do we have to add to this to improve the experience? Yes, but the point is here, was it efficient?
Yeah.
Okay, it was efficient. So now comes the point of interaction. So that means the interactive element has to be there, but it can't be that interactive is distracted from there. It's not that the doorman there now starts a whole conversation. You just expect them to smile and open the door on time, so when you get to the door, it's open, not half open. Right? You understand? So, in other words, it's how much is necessary, because that's also important, because we've introduced the experiential here. That doesn't mean that now it's a forum for everybody getting their feelings and all this. We're not talking about that. You understand? We're talking about that you have to consider the feeling. So in other words, yes, we've gotten this, and the door will be opened, the car door, then the luggage will be taken out, and the other door will be opened, and then, the efficiency of the counter, and then getting to the lift, and then getting to your room. Okay, so all that's organized, but the point is people there smiling and being comfortable with it and all that, then that has to be considered. Now, why will they be smiling? Why will they be that? Because the dealings behind that is also taken care of, right? So we can be organizing, okay, Prashad's going to be like this and that and all these things and this and this and that and all that. It's nice. But now the people serving, now, do they have arrangements for Prashad? Is the organizers worried if they'll get something to eat? Right? Most places, that's like, that's like a, you know, a negative 10 chance. You know, I would say more, but I'm trying to be liberal here. Like that. In other words, the organizers couldn't care less if the service got into the need. You know what I'm saying? You know, in fact, if you bring it up, it's this is service for who sacrifice, you know. You know, where's their sacrifice to arrange for it? Nothing. Because there's no such thing as sacrifice when it comes to management. Because you're the center of attention. You're the supreme. You understand? So we see in here, all problems that come in management aren't lack of technique. It's lack of attitude. So nowadays, as we're going into and trying all these different systems, like that, you know, they've been talking strategic planning for the last 20 years, and then I think 2 years ago they started talking about systems. You heard of a system called systems? There's one called systems. Why they call the system systems, I don't know, but whatever it is. And then last October, when they had the GBC meetings, then they introduced something, De Bono. You ever heard of De Bono? The guy with all the hats. Six hats. No hats? Okay. Too American. Okay. So the whole point is it's not working, so just another system, another managerial organization, that's it. That, in other words, this abstract, we just changed the abstract. That's because they never deal with the whole personal thing. Because otherwise, management, the rules of management are the same as they've been since the time of Alexander or back in Caesar. It's all the same thing. Nothing changes. The material world, nothing changes. All that changes is the conscious. What's the difference between Satyuga and Kali Yuga? It's consciousness. Right? There they accept four aspects of Dharma, then three, then two, and here it's one. You know? That's... Does this make sense? But management, the topic is management, so it's not a forum for that personal expression and feelings and all these kinds of, it's not for that. It's that you have the experiences, okay, it tends to be impersonal. Okay, so then what would make it personal? Okay, so that we just explained that whole thing coming. What would make it personal? Because when I first said it, then the first thing comes up, you feel it's impersonal. So what would make it personal?
At least at the reception, a few minutes of exchange.
Okay. And that exchange should be about?
Well, it's a client which comes over and over again, you know, how is your life, how is your family,
okay.
How is business going.
Okay.
That's that they know that.
So then with that, okay, that's good. So then they should know more about the people that are there. But then, okay, now as the person is there, do you know them? Do you know what have they have wife and kids? Or only they should know about you? So in other words, as you're expecting obligation from them to remember who you are and all that, do you remember them? Yeah. So in other words, you have to look at all these things. Is that if we're going to demand that they know us, then we can't expect unless we know them. Unless it's a matter of false ego. Then it's, I'm the big guy, I'm staying at the hotel, they're just the person behind the counter. So I don't need to know anything about them, but they should know, remember everything about me. You know, I want my laundry at this time, and then the kids want to eat this at this time, and all these different things. That's there, okay, you're the paying customer and all that. And being the paying customer that you're, you know, the center of the universe, and that's okay, but now we're talking devotional service, so is that part of the process? So therefore, then, are you willing to know about them? Right? Okay, so now, that conversation about with you, okay, now that's good, because you're a woman, and like that. Now, would you expect as much of that conversation if the person behind the counter was a man? Or you would expect there'd be a little bit more of that exchange if it was a woman? Okay. If it's a man, it would be something there, but a little less. Now, what happens if you're with other men or with other women? So let's say there's another woman there that's never been there before and you've been there. Now, is it appropriate that they're sitting having this whole conversation with you? Well, they say, well, the woman's just standing there waiting to get to the room, because they could just hand you the key and you go to the room, but you're talking for a few minutes. You understand? So that's what we mean. Everything has to be considered. Not just, this is where I get my satisfaction out of this, but the point is that it's a matter of service. Then it's a matter of that exchange, that personal, you're considering the other person with you. Right? Does that make sense? So all that has to be seen. That's what we're talking about. It's everybody's experience. Right? So that's where we went back to the thing of the prashad. So, okay, they're serving prashad. Nicely seen that everyone's getting a good experience by serving, but who's seen that the servers are getting a good experience? Like that. Generally speaking, it will never be a manager. I mean, absolutely. It's just like, you know what I'm saying? So, why? Because they think that because I've organized it, that's it. Now, if people get a good experience from it, that's not the consideration. No, it was managed nicely. But the point is you're managing an experience. Devotional service is an experience. So you're managing an experience. They're people. You're managing an experience. So that's where it lacks. If we're saying that we have to improve management, it's all we have to do is improve the devotional attitude, the personal element. Because as far as technique goes, I mean, in the past, I would say is we've had managers that are, you know, 10 times better than managers we have nowadays. But we'll complain that it was, you know, too strong. So it's attitude. But it's not that they're all touchy-feely and things don't organize properly. You have to have a balance. Does that make sense? So you have to balance the two. Is that what external you're dealing with? That has to balance with the internal experience. You know, and people that are overly experiential and have to share that with everybody and everything, and that's their thing. That's their own personal thing. It has to be considered, but at the same time, it has to be controlled, because no one else in the room actually wants to hear. You know, you never seen that? The 5-minute question because of this and that. Nobody wants the 5-minute question. Everyone wants this nice one sentence question. Right? Unless it's all about feelings and all that, then, you know, management's out the window. You know, does that make sense? Then get some snacks, put on a chick flick, you know, and then let's go for it. You understand? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. You have to consider then what's going on and all these things. This all has to be there. But you have to see is that the balance between all that. So that's what the manager has to do, balance all that. So it's not easy. It's hard. That's why the position is there. Nowadays, it's no, I've given the title, I'm in charge, therefore I get all facility. No, it's because you do the work of the in charge, that's why you get the facility. So that's why there may be more benefit, because of the more, how it can accommodate and assist everybody else's service. So that's there. If you only did your job efficiently and didn't actually help anyone else's service, you only get the benefit for the service you did. Not for assisting everyone else. But now if everyone else gets assisted, you get the benefit from your service and part for what you've done for them. Does that make sense? You know, it says, when the king protects the people, he gets part of their good karma. So in other words, if the manager manages right, that everybody's able to be Krishna conscious, facilitates their service, they get 1/6 of the benefit from doing the service. Right? But the other way, if they manage them but never take care of their needs and don't actually take care of them, they don't get the 1/6, but two, they get all the bad karma of those people. So if you ever wonder why sometimes really heavy managers go down really fast, well, that's can be an aspect. You know, besides what we start with the false ego and these things. So you don't get situated nicely in service. Don't get a taste. So the philosophy has full effect on it because it's devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes?
I just have a simple question. how can one know when Krishna is pleased? Right? I can always think, okay, I'm doing things this way in the integration.
How can you know? See the reaction of the Vaishnavas. Are they also happy? Because as I said, when Krishna is pleased, everybody's happy. So that's how you see. Now, also you have to judge here is that the more spiritually developed someone is, their pleasure is going to be more indicative rather than someone who's less. You know what I'm saying? But when you see everybody's happy, like at a festival, that means Krishna's happy. You know, I mean, there's always that individual who, doesn't matter what you do, you know, you can't make them happy. But if everybody else but them is happy, then you know it's good. But now, if they're also happy, now you know it's really good. So that's how you can judge. It's how the devotees respond. How do you feel and how the devotees respond. Is that okay? Is that good? Okay. How are we doing on time? You go till?
11:45.
11:45, okay. Maharaj Parikshit was a Mahabhagavat, or a first-class devotee, who was not only well-versed in the science of devotion, but also able to convert others to become devotees by his transcendental instructions. Right? So it's not that he just knows management, he knows the philosophy also. Like I've seen situations where someone who is, you know, well versed in the scriptures but not so practiced in, let's say, management, was pointing out to a manager certain techniques that he could have included or considered. And the other person, you know, is, you know, more experienced in management, but not very much in reading Prabhupada's books. And they could see the point they're being made, but they said this, you know, I don't study so much Prabhupada's books, I'm too absorbed in management and developing management techniques. So there's a good chance whatever's the latest managerial system, they had read the book many times and were very good at it, but hadn't like connected it to their philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So then the difficulty comes up is that here we see Maharaj Parikshit. He knew both. He was expert at management, but he was also, he was very well studied in the scriptures, so he could make the connection. So when we read something significant in the philosophy, how that applies into our service, then that should be part of the contemplation we do. Yes?
I continue with the previous question. So, can men mirror from ladies?
Can men be?
Mirror. This, that the devotee is happy. If there's a lady and there's prabhus, then can this lady mirror if the prabhus are happy, then Krishna is happy.
How are you using the term mirror?
Reflect.
Reflect.
Yes.
And men reflect ladies that are their devotional service is pleasing Krishna.
Because reflect means it's going off one onto the other. I mean, that's how I'm understanding it. That's why I'm not giving the context.
Means that when ladies do devotional service, then men are happy.
Means they're doing the service, or that the women are happy, and therefore the manager knows that it's happy.
Yeah, I mean that. You mentioned that all the devotees are happy.
Right.
So also when ladies do the devotional service, then can the men be that?
Be happy.
I mean, be reflect that Krishna's happiness to that of that devotional service. I think it was like that. Was it right?
Yes, exactly.
So it means that the woman's doing the service. Can the men also be happy?
No, I mean. When we are supposed to see Krishna's happiness from the other devotees,
right.
Is it also like all the devotees, or is it Matachis for Matachis?
And men for men.
Yes.
Generally, it's all devotees. If you see all the men are happy, the women aren't, or the women are happy, the men aren't, then it means we didn't consider enough. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like that situation Mati mentioned there. Is it coming and talking to the person at the counter? Now, you've been coming many times, they would know you and interact and show them, she finds that quite pleasant. But like we said, now if she's with some man or some other lady that hasn't been there, that they wouldn't consider that nice, so then you would want to consider their happiness in that also. So therefore, you're quicker there. And then later when you come down, then you can talk to them at the counter, because now there's no rush. So yes, it's the same. You just have to consider. The men will be looking at a bit more of the bit more of the mechanical, the women more of the experiential, but you have to balance it. That makes sense, doesn't make sense. Yeah? Okay. Okay. Yeah, and able to convert others to become devotees by his transcendental instructions. That means that you can inspire someone in devotional service through the service that you're doing. So one, you can preach Krishna consciousness, and also you can show the services that are going on, how they're connected to Krishna. So you can inspire someone in devotional service by explaining to them their position and what they're doing in the whole process. Does that make sense? So trying to inspire someone to do the work mechanically, you can also show how it connects to Krishna. Right? So it's not just the efficiency of my telling you what to do. You say jump, they say how high. But you have to explain why jumping high is important. You know, or even why jumping is important. Does that make sense? So then they see, and the whole thing, they become inspired. Maharaj Parikha was, therefore, a devotee of the first order, and thus used to consult great sages and learned Brahmins, who could advise him by the Shastras how to execute the state administration. So here comes then the next point, is that why that point of humility is there, is because then one can take instruction from higher authority. Well, that's very important. So here, then, when the state's there, then the Brahmins are there and all this, so we have Prabhupada's books, we have the Shastras, we are consulting that, we can understand what to do. Right? So when we see that in connection, just like Rupa Goswami mentions that by approach, that you approach the previous acharyas through your acharya. So then how Prabhupada describes it, that then we appreciate what the other acharyas may say and the same thing, like let's say the purports of their acharyas and the Bhagavatam, then we say, but we have to see it through Prabhupada's. So in the same way, any other knowledge we're gaining, even its material managerial knowledge, we're studying some book, we still have to see it in the light of how Prabhupada's explaining it. Right? Because we may say, oh, Prabhupada doesn't deal with that detail. No, but that detail is based on a principle. Prabhupada does talk about that principle. So if we can't see what it goes back to, then we're not actually seeing what that book's offering. Does that make sense? Because the book won't explain that, because it's not understood, it needs to be explained. Does that make sense? That's why there's so many management books. Yeah. Because they tell you technique, and the technique, you can see the technique, and then if you can apply that technique into your situation, it works. And if it doesn't work. So you have to come up with another book that shows different details. In other words, let's say there's 10 details, and in my management system I deal with 6. And so I'm getting 6, and it's working very nicely. But those 4 aren't working. So then someone else will come up with a management book that addresses those 4. Right? And now that's the new, the latest thing, because now whoever's trained in that system of 6, they'll do the 6 things. Now the management of 4. Right? Then when you add that in, now you're getting 10, and it works. But no one knows why it's working. Right? Because before we said, no, it's the 6, and now it's, no, it's the 4. They don't understand it's 10. Right? Now, as long as you have people that have been trained in the 6 and are applying the 4, then it will work. Right? Because they'll be doing both. Right? But now what will happen is the next generation of managers, as they come in, they're only going to be trained in the 4, not the 6. So now it'll start to fall apart. So as long as you have someone doing both, then the system will be valid. But as soon as it goes to the next generation, then it's only the 4. And now it's worse than before when you got 6 out of 10. Now you only get 4 out of 10. So now someone will come up with, you know, something about the 6. Or you may not even get the 6. They may have come up with another 4. And so that'll make it, it'll improve it, but it's still not 10. You understand? So that's why there's so many books out there. So they're just dealing with different aspects of one complete thing. Does that make sense? So you have to see it in relationship to what Prabhupada's saying. Because Prabhupada shows how the principle connects. Here we're not getting into too much detail. And we're not hearing detail of how he interacts with the Brahmins, how he's preaching, how he studied his scriptures. You know, like, okay, this much time a day, or, and you know, this time of day I always put this aside. You know, somebody has some technique for reading. We're not discussing that, we're discussing the principle of knowing the scriptures. The principle of hearing from authority. Bhagavatam will show that and then how that principle connects, because that's universal. Because details, there's unlimited details. So if you know where the detail connects to the principle, then you know how the principle connects to Krishna. Does that make sense? That's how the Bhagavatam's working. Because sometimes we'll say, oh, there's no detail here, so there's no real management. No, because this is the real management. This is here that works. Then as you can add the secondary detail, then you expand the application. But if you have this and don't have the detail, it still works. Does that make sense? May not be as sophisticated or as developed, but it still works. Does that make sense? That's why you see devotees in the early days, though they didn't have so much technique necessarily, but they knew how to connect it to Krishna. And so it worked. It was successful. Does that make sense? And then now we're getting more into the detail, but we can't, in the process, forget about the principle and the connection to devotional service. Otherwise, we'll lose the whole process. Does this make sense? Yes.
Is it really necessary to read all these Karmic books on management, or can we just expect
from... No, to read all these things, not necessarily. Means, because the point is if you read, unless you catch the principles at work, you won't be able to use it. You know, it's like an example. I give an example for something in management talking about cooking. So if you only see the detail of the cooking and can't relate that into management, you won't get any benefit. So the point is the detail, you have to see the principle behind that. That you can take over to another area. In other words, so many details are there, they all connect back to the same principle. So if you see the principle, then, okay, we're using this detail, this is come, this is come, like this. You know, it's just like before. If the point is people are getting a good experience, right? And so, since we're going to a hotel, then the good experience is things being efficient, right? And at the same time as people are pleasant, they're personal, right? So if it's efficient and personal, now it's complete. If it's only efficient or only personal, then it's a problem. You know, like sometimes we have these, I don't know, you have them here, like a bed and breakfast? Those kind of things, people's homes, and they have a room and you can stay, and you know, like that. Sometimes they talk too much, you know, and you just, you know, you spend a long day, you just, and then, oh, hi, this and that, and you know, that, and that. Another time. Right? So it's a matter of, it has to be that the two are balanced. Right? In other words, if it's a business hotel, it's going to be a little more, you know, like this. If it's more of a family, you know, thing, then you expect it to be a little more, you know, interactive and all that. You understand? So you choose according to things. So that balance between the two, that has to be there. So that means you have to understand the principle that's there. Otherwise, how do you know, okay, it's efficient and the experience, because the two are connected. You know, that certain efficiency, that's giving you a certain experience. At the same time, it's not that person alone is not there. So therefore, when you go through the process, now if it works between that balance, it's okay. But like I said, if there's other people involved, they're looking at, they want the efficiency because they want to get to the room because they're tired. Well, you met them after, you just saw them, 2 weeks ago, and they were just about to, their son was going to have a test or something. So how did that go? You don't do that. You go to the room. Because otherwise, your experience is nice, their experience is not. So the thing is these management books, you can pick up some technique from there, but if you don't see the principle, you absolutely won't be able to do it. I remember seeing one devotee managing a major temple in the society, and he was a follower of the Covey system. Right? Not only that, he was actually one of the trainers, official trainers in the Covey Institute. And he was the temple president. So now, according to the present day conditions, he should have been an excellent temple president. He failed so badly as the temple president, his devotees were so dissatisfied that he basically gave up that service. And to continue his service, he basically went to the opposite side of the planet. Nobody knew him, everything like that. So he came in clean and new, and everything worked. But the point was is that it wasn't the technique, right? Like that. And I knew him then. I liked him and all that. But he didn't do well with. As a person, he was really nice, but as a manager, no one liked him. And now I've seen him again. It's like, what is it? Yeah, 20 years later or more. And now, experience and all that, now he's able to broaden that, so he's able to include the other aspects of that. And so now it's working nicely, because he gets the balance. So, unless you see the principle that's there, then you won't be able to use it, because the books will give a specific example. And if you can catch that specific example and see it back to the principle, that you can use it in another example, it won't work for you.
But I think the danger can also be like that those books can have different kinds of philosophies, like you were just mentioning, like Jaimini, okay, this is Jaimini, or this philosophy, or that philosophy. Yeah. If it's not Vedanta, then as the devotees, we take, let's say, some impersonal principles from a karmi book. And then we try to apply that in our society.
Yeah. It will be a problem. But the point is if you're just taking the principle that's there, you're not taking their philosophy, you're not taking that. So then it's there. But the point is you already have to know. So if you know from the devotional, then they may show you something that you would have figured out anyway, but you'll learn quicker. Does that make sense? Just like if someone's a manager, because they have the nature, they will work it out. It may take them 5 years, but if they read the book, maybe they'll figure it out and they'll get it and be able to use it in two. But the point is that if they're not looking at it from, if the book itself can't teach management. You understand? Because management is a perspective. It's not a mechanics. You use certain mechanics. It's just like, okay, if I teach you how to hold the handle of the frying pan, and then to be able to flip it where I drop the back and lift the front, and you get that down really nicely, or how to hold the spoon and how to move it, and this way and turn it over and get the different things. Do you know how to cook? By that, do you know how to cook? But those are techniques used by chefs. Do you understand? So that's the point. The management book just teaches you those techniques, but if you don't know how to cook, you can't use them. So that's the foolishness, is that we have a 10-day seminar on this management system, but if you're not a manager, you can't use it. Does that make sense? And we always have to remember, bureaucracy is not management. He's here because we're talking management meaning administration. We're not talking management means, the guy managed to open the car door and get inside without leaving his, his bag outside or something. We're not talking that. So here, when we say management, we're meaning administration. So bureaucrats may be part of the administration, and they may have their little portfolio, but they're not administrators. So they're not managers, what we're talking about. So if we use these modern systems of bureaucracy, and then being a good bureaucrat, we think we're a manager, so this all applies, and it will fail totally. You know what I'm saying? It means we're trying to please Krishna, so there'll be some effect, yes, because we're doing devotional service. But as far as technical management goes, it's a flop. Is that the word? Yes, because they don't know the principle. They don't know why they're doing it. They just know. That's the whole point. So if we learn from this book, oh, the book says you have to do this, but they don't know why. Does that make sense? So the point is if you have to go to these karmi kind of programs, then that generally means you don't actually know management. Because even when we take Covey, what's the name of the book? Right? Seven Habits of Successful People. So those successful people, did they go to a seminar to learn it? Did they read his book? No. He studied those people and made this book. So who's reading the book? People who aren't successful. If you're successful, why would you read his book? You understand? So in other words, successful people, you associate with them and learn from them. That's how you gain. But reading these books, then that's well. It's like someone who doesn't know how to cook, if they read a cookbook, can they cook? Not really. Because, okay, if you go down and say exactly how much, go, okay, put in, you know, a quarter teaspoon of salt and half a teaspoon of this, but does any management book give you that detail? No. So, it will be more like the, let's say, the Indian cookbooks. They don't give you measurements. They'll say, make a chaunce with, okay, ginger chili and cumin seeds, and then you're going to put in the, you know, the potatoes, you're going to saute them like that, you're going to saute the vegetables then like that, then you're going to put a little bit of water, and then you're going to put these spices, and like that, and then when it's done, then you're going to put some tomatoes, some sugar, and garnish it with some coriander leaves. Now, for someone who knows how to cook, that's a perfect recipe. Because now if I don't know, well, how much oil do I put? How much cumin? How long do I cook the cumin? That's not your book. You understand? So that's those manager books. If you're a manager, you read it, you'll get some benefit from it. But if you're not a manager, you could read a million of those books, you still won't be. That's the fun part people don't catch. Because they don't give the detail. You can't. It's just like cooking is a mentality, is an ability. Then you can teach detail within it. But if you don't have the ability, you can't cook. So you can't teach someone with no managerial ability how to manage. It's impossible. Those with managerial ability, you can tell them, show them more technique and all that, because it's just they haven't thought of that in their experience and all, and it broadens their understanding. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what you're doing. So one has to know the limitations. Not that you can't get a benefit from it, but you have to know the limitation. So in other words, the attitude, that they'll always have a problem. Not you're going to be confident in this and that, but point is, why does it work? Why would one have confidence? Is it because I can do it, or is it because the laws of nature function according to their, you know, the standard methods? Right? In other words, the laws of nature set out how management works. You follow that, you can be confident that you'll get a result. Right? Does that make sense? So the confidence comes from Krishna, not from ourselves. That, yeah, I'm a great guy, and you know, all that, and check out the suit. You know, no, it comes from that you know you're following. Now, if you know, okay, you're confident because you got the suit, that's because everybody else respects the suit. They don't care about you. Right? So therefore, I got the suit, I got the briefcase, I drove up in the, you know, the Mercedes, and, you know, so, you know, it's going to be good. Because I'm following Krishna's laws. That's why I'm confident. They're confident just because they got false ego coming out their ears. Right? The more it's dripping out of their ears, and the better they do. Right? And that's only happening not because they want it to happen. is happening because they have the karma for it to happen. Right? You read the book and it says show attitude. Now suddenly now you got the attitude. You're walking down the street, you're hey, yeah, doing all the things. It's all happening just because you read it in the book. No, if you don't have the karma, you can't do it. So we always have to remember is that we say we're not the body, and we're not. But the point is the body is the body. The mind is the mind. So we have what we have. I'm not this frying pan. But the point is, it is a frying pan. So you can only do frying pan stuff with it. Right? Does that make sense? Now, I want to whack somebody in the head with a frying pan, I can do it. Ever try that with a grater? Whack the guy with the grater. They're going to, what's going on? You know, whack him with a frying pan. You know, he'll ask you later. You know, especially if you pick up that, you know, your grandmother's cast iron frying pan. That really works good. You understand? So, therefore, the body and mind only have the qualities that they have. Now, the only way to change that is through devotional service. Therefore, someone doesn't have those, but by Krishna's grace, then they can develop those qualities. You know, if they match the service and their position. So, that's the whole point, is that it's very limited what you can get from those books. But now, the Bhagavatam, that's written for the soul. That means all living entities can get some benefit. So everyone can become Krishna conscious. Now whether you can appreciate the techniques and details of management here, that's another thing. But in any case, you appreciate Bhrigad Maharaj's position. He is surrendered to authority, he knows the scriptures, he practices it, he's able to convince others of Krishna consciousness. Now will that apply to everyone or not? That applies to everyone. Now, doing that in the context of administration, those that are in that, they'll appreciate it. Someone else may not. Or they may appreciate, yes, leaders can do this. They can't do it, but leaders can. So that's the point, is that Bhagavatam is universal. These others are specifically limited to their particular area. Does that make sense? You know, some do a little bit more broad than others. That's just depending upon the particular person and how much they can perceive, right? That's a whole other psychological area that I guess we could go into it now for a touch. Is that, see, when you perceive something, this is important. It's connected with our point of the experiential and what we're perceiving. So how does that work mechanically? It means you look at something. Now, the first thing is there's the pramana chaitanya. That's the ability to uncover what it is. Otherwise, it's just existing there, but your ability to be able to perceive that depends upon how much you can uncover from what it is. Right? Does that make sense? Like, an ant sees the chair. Right? Well, it only sees part of the chair. But so what do they uncover from that? Can they tell that it's a chair, people sit in it, and you know, this is, you know, done with the wooden frames and all these things, it's more like the French kind of you know, influence of design and all that, and can they tell any of that? No. So that's the point, is how much of that pramana chaitanya you have, you can uncover what it is, that much you can see. Otherwise, you can't. That's what we were saying before. If you're not a manager, you read a management book, you don't have the pramana chaitanya to uncover much. So you won't get anything. So as a manager, they can uncover more. Does that make sense? So that's the first stage, is do you even have, that's the meaning of adhikars, is how much qualification you have. So that's one aspect, is how much can you see? So if you can't see managerial opportunities, then why be a manager? Because you don't have the pramana chaitanya to do that. Right? Then the next one is then the vritti chaitanya. It has a few names, but we'll just use it. No, not vritti chaitanya. The vritti is the overall. Part, Vaikarya, I think. Vaikarya is the transformation in that. So then the Vaikarya Chaitanya is then now the mind seeing what it sees. You know, how much it can see from the effect of the Pramana Chaitanya. Now it takes that form. So let's say we're looking at that chair. The mind actually literally takes the form of that chair. And depending on how much you perceive, like we said from the previous, the Pramana Chaitanya, now you'll get, you know, the shape, the texture, the colors, the, let's say the patterns on the cloth there. That's why sometimes someone asks him, well, what did the chair look like? And he says, well, it was just a chair. Because their mind only took that much, that it was the kind of that shape of a chair. But someone, let's say, who knows furniture, then they will take that and they'll be able to tell you exactly what's going on. Does that make sense? So that it actually literally takes that form. And what you perceive in the way of the five senses, it can be there. Right? So the shape, the color, the touch, the texture, most likely with the chair, the taste is not going to be there, but possibly the smell. You know, it's been sitting in the attic, you know, so your great-grandmother's, you know, they might have a smell. So all that will be there in that, what are they called? What is the word I use?
Vaikarya.
Okay, I think it's that. So so the mind transforms into that, because Vaikarya means transformation. Now, that will then be taken, so that's the first part, that's the objective part. Right? They ask abstract, just what you saw. Now that'll go into the memory. Right? The mind will then, now, because that's all done through the, you can say the manas aspect, where the mind is connection with the senses. Now where the mind is connected with the intelligence of false ego. Right? That now it'll access the memory of the intelligence. And now it will bring up what are previous memories or experiences of this. Right? So then, that's where then the samskara, the impression comes in. Because the vritti itself, technically, is just the form of it at this point. But now, as you add in your experience, then the vritti changes to include your impression. So is this a good chair? This is not a good chair. You know? This chair reminds you of the French Revolution and your whole family lost their heads, so this is a bad chair. You know, someone else is, oh, you've seen this and that, and you know, our family used to have that kind of furniture in our old house, and I really liked that, so this is a good chair. So that's where the experiential comes in. So the experiential will affect what you can see, and what you see will affect what you're experiencing. They affect each other. Right? So there's a dynamic between that objective and subjective. So for instance, yes.
Yeah, so I would like to ask actually this explanation in the same way that if you don't have an experience behind you,
right,
and you cannot be a good manager. I mean, it's necessary that you have some kind of life experience.
No, it's you have to have, what we're always talking about is the potential. That as you develop life experience, it'll get better. But let's say, just like for an example, let's say you have a business family, and their child is born, they have potential of business. So even in, you know, third grade, they're making business deals over lunch, and who gets this, I'll give you this for that, and I got this sandwich, and I'll give you that, and I'll get, you know, like this. They're already doing business. But someone else who doesn't have that potential, even if you trained him in business, he couldn't do business, right? But, does that make sense? That's what I'm talking about, there's a potential. Now is what you're talking about, that experience, the more you gain, yes, the better it will get. So they become a more experienced manager, but you have to have the potential. Now, let's say somebody doesn't have the potential to be a manager, but the field of management makes sense to them. They can be someone who knows the field and works under a businessman. You understand? Like somebody with an MBA?
Yeah.
They know the field very nicely, but they themselves personally couldn't do business. But they could work for a businessman who knows business and do amazing things. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of, you have the field where you can lead in the field or where you can follow in the field. Because someone else, let's say, you can lead not in business, but let's say administration or in education. And so therefore, then the people who can follow in those areas, then they can follow what you're doing. Does that make sense? You know, I say, yeah, okay, like that. Okay, we're good. That'll be good in my time. A few minutes, okay. Yeah, so that's the thing, is then that last one is called Pramitri Chaitanya. So the Pramitri Chaitanya is the samskara, the impression you have from it, because that's what's actually going to work on. The other two are just what you're perceiving, that's the objective. But according to the Pramitri, what's the subjective, that's why you're going to act. Does that make sense? So these things go together. So that means that's the final vritti of the mind. Vritti means that form that it'll take on. So means the first is just how much you can uncover it, then how much it actually takes on, but then there'll be the experiential on top of that. So that's the complete vritti. Does that make sense? So now in this, then you have also five aspects or five stages. So I'm saying these now because we'll be referring to these all through the discussion. Is that you have proper perception of something, right? Or cognition. You can also have improper, right? Then the third stage is how you can analyze something. Does that make sense? That's the aspect of anuman, or inference. Because I'm seeing things as facts, but then I have to analyze how that applies to something else. So that's where the point comes before. You can read the book, but if you don't have the experience of the other, you can't convert it. Like if I know management and I read a management book, they're saying one thing and I have experience in another. I came through, analyzing or through logic and try to figure out what's the principle here, what's the principle there, and once I get those two to match, then I know what it's talking about. So that ability to analyze like that. It's also in your imagination. All these things come out of that ability. That's that same function, right? So then, does that make sense? So that's what you're going to be using. Now, some people from analyzing come up with the wrong conclusion, some people come up with the right conclusion. So that's why then, by associating with others, then you start to see things in a more correct way. Otherwise, we may have a whole different idea, right? Then the last two aspects of that, because these are all five aspects of the intelligence. But it's also the vrittis follow this. So they're, it's just whether you're looking at the mind side of it or the intelligence side of it. Then the other one is, what is it? Sleep. Because if you don't get good sleep, none of this works. Because it's also a part of the intelligence. Sleep is part of the intelligence. That's why if you have too much to think about, you can't sleep. Because the mind, the intelligence analyzes things, the reasoning thing, and this and that, and so you can't sleep. I always say, whenever you have a list, you can never remember one of them, so it'll come up later. When we take from another side, then we'll get that one, and then we'll forget it. Okay. So you see, because these, in other words, what we were discussing before, this is what it's based on. So this philosophy that we're discussing, this level that we're discussing at, this is Vedanta philosophy. So that's why you see it's on this principles that it always applies, because that's Vedanta. So that's what we see here, is because he knows so nicely this philosophy, therefore he can apply it anywhere. Does that make sense? But we've heard all these things because we follow Vedanta. We just don't necessarily connect them that they're practical. We tend to think that they're not so practical. Okay. Maharaj Prigat was therefore a devotee of the first order, and thus he used to consult great sages and learned Brahmins who could advise him in the Shastras how to execute the state of administration. So it's not just the detail that's there in the Shastra, that you need to know. But it's that you have the proper understanding and mentality to apply it. That's what makes it very solid. That's what the Brahmins are for. Because for the Brahmins, they're going to be looking at at a particular situation, but their samskara is different from the administrator. Because the administrator has all the different things and the involvement and the feelings that, for the Brahman it doesn't. So therefore he can give you a much more clear view. Because for us, sometimes the samskara may get in the way. But for him, your samskara is not going to get in their way. You understand? But the point is they don't apply it, you apply it. Right? Parikshit Maharaj applies it, not the Brahman. So the Brahman is there to give a perspective that they may not see due to their involvement in it. So that's why this combination between the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, you always find it in the Vedic system. Yes?
Maharaj, can you say the Brahmins, they give the right attitude?
They're given the attitude, but they're also giving the practical knowledge. So you understand the philosophical point, the attitude, and the knowledge, because you have all these things. You have the knowledge and skills, but you have the attitude. Right? You have to have both of those when you apply, because that will give you the two results. When you get a result, you get the knowledge and skill will give you the physical result, but the attitude will give you the experience. So if I get a good physical result, but the attitude's wrong, the experience will be bad. That's what we were talking about in the very beginning. Someone's a very good manager, but their attitude's wrong. So for us, the main attitude is being Krishna conscious. For Krishna conscious, then it gives the best result. Does this make sense? Yeah.
I think I found this five functions on intelligence.
Okay.
Right. May I read?
Yes, please.
Doubt,
yes.
Misapprehension, correct apprehension,
yes.
Memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristic of intelligence.
Yeah, so memory, because I mentioned it before, that's why it didn't come up. So doubt is the analytical aspect. Because when I have a doubt, I analyze. Because if there's no doubt, why will I analyze? You understand? So. The word doubt, the word imagination, the word analyzation, they'll all be that same category. They're just different features of the one thing. So when there's a doubt, I analyze, then I may come to correct understanding or incorrect understanding. Now to do all that, I'm going to use our memory for analyzing, because I can't analyze with nothing. So I have my memory and I have what I've perceived, right? Then all that works together. When all that's been working too much, then I have to sleep. So you get good rest. That's why it's very good, proper to get good rest. You get good rest, then you can analyze. So you want to get enough rest that you can work nicely, the brain works, but not too much, otherwise ignorance comes in. So you may be well rested that you'll be in ignorance. You know, like a koala bear sleeps 22 hours a day. But you know, they're not known as the most bright animals. Right? You know, so those are the five. So, you know, be referring back to these, so, in case we forget that you have it. Okay, so we'll stop here for a few minutes.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Jai Shri Prabhupada ki.